Good morning, Mr. Roger. How are you?
Well, good morning.
I am not Nick DiGilio. I am Steve Dale, of course, and of course to you, because you can see me, but not everyone out there can.
Well, people looking on the website can see you.
Well, I hope they are, WGNRadio.com.
Yeah.
I'll be talking to you more this morning for sure as you have other newscasts for us, and also if anything in the news happens, you'll be here to break in, right?
Yes sir. I will do my utmost duty to keep you all up to date.
Well, this ought to be interesting, especially to a news dude like you. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Deborah Felmuth. She is the author of a book called Syria, Remember Me. It's a beautiful coffee table kind of book. She lived in Syria for 13, 14 years. And she says we've kind of got it wrong about what their culture is really like. And I ask her if they have it wrong about us and what they think really of us. Not the terrorist, but
right,
we know what they think of us.
Right.
But I'm talking about the average person on the street in Syria and what's it like to be a woman in Syria. So we talk about all of that. And then for sure, if I know you, sir, and I have for many years, you will be in studio, in this studio, not your newsroom.
That very studio.
When we bring in a turkey. We're going to be talking with Alberto Mendez. He's a chef at El Mariachi Tequila Bar. I bet you like that name. And Revolution Mexican Steakhouse with Tony Estrada. And they are going to talk about a Mexican Thanksgiving.
That will be something different for me.
Remember the TV show Family Affair from back in the day?
Sure, yeah, with Sissy and da 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 da. No, that's Three Sons. My Three Sons. I got the. They almost sound the same on the themes.
Once you get the tune right, you're going to do the official bump for us into this.
Oh, great.
The name of the book, you're right, she played Sissy. It's called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of a Life in Hollywood. She knew everyone in Hollywood.
Ooh.
And still does. So we'll talk to Kathy Garver. That's the actress who played Sissy. And in fact, she wrote a cookbook. Her last book before this one is a cookbook. And I can't do a show. I'm not really talking about pets. I'm just filling in for Nick, which is an honor, incidentally. But they have to get a little bit of dog stuff in. And you know what? It is a tradition now. For 12 or 13 years, the National Dog Show presented by Purina. We will talk to Mr. Dog Show himself, David Fry. All of that, and as they say in radio.
Yes.
And more. So don't leave. And as I say on my show, sit, stay. We are going to be talking. You like that, Roger?
We're going to be
talking about a serious topic about what's really going on in Syria and what, as I said, they really think about us in just a few minutes. So don't move.
So interviews are frequently pitched my way, and anyone who sits in the seat who does this sort of thing on the radio, on TV, or writes newspaper columns gets these pitches. And I thought this one couldn't be more timely. The name of this book is Syria, Remember Me. And the author of this incredibly beautiful, I mean, the images are amazing, coffee table book, is someone who lived in Syria for some number of years. Deborah Felmuth, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, how many years did you actually live in Syria?
Well, I lived starting in 1991. I lived in Syria continuously for about 5 years. I was actually teaching music in an international school there. And then from 1996 until 2012, I lived in Syria for about half of each year, about 6 months per year.
So how does it come to be that a person who's from the United States says, even back then, I want to go and live in Syria of all places? How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it's my particular history, I guess. I grew up a child of the 60s, protesting the Vietnam War and really believing when the Vietnam War was over that we had done it. We had protested war out of existence. You know, I was naive and full of heart that might be the truth. So when we entered the Gulf War in 1991, I was quite upset about the fact, even though I realized that I knew nothing of the circumstances. Ignorance is sometimes, you know, a passport, and usually it's not a good one. But in this case, it turned out to be a good thing because I went and decided to take a job in an international school teaching music in the Middle East in order that I might learn something. And it was my very, very good fortune to land in the lap of the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world, in Damascus, Syria.
So you lived there.
Started
all
by teaching school.
Right, and by living there all that time, you became, I assume, accustomed to their culture. I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I suppose at the end of the day, this is what people want to know. We have our thoughts about the Middle East and what it must be like, particularly places like Syria, you know, where terrorists are born and all that. To live there, what is it really like?
Well, the first thing that I can say is that the reason I stayed for so long was because I was deeply affected and indeed fell in love with the culture. Arabic culture is full of honor, dignity, respect. Well, none of those words would be used today in describing what is going on there. So I've written this book in order to give people some of the information about that culture. And I am deeply distressed, as is everyone else, about what this latest turn of events is. But I can say that the culture, in its intact and most beauteous form, is one of the most extraordinary studies of the art of relationship that I've ever encountered in the world. Even the naming of each other, when people call each other, they don't use their given names, but rather their relationship names. So I was, for instance, known as wife of my uncle, or by the children in the family, or someone might be known as father of Steve, or mother of David, sister of Julia. And so the art of relationship is a very, very tender art and full of respect. Another just a little tiny hint of the culture might be in how they say welcome. When you knock on the door and someone opens, they would say to you in Arabic, ahlan wa sahlan, which means like family and on level ground, because ahl comes from the word family and sahel is a wide open plain. So when somebody welcomes you in and says, oh, ahlan wa sahlan, they're saying come in like family and on level ground.
And I'm sure all of that is true, and that's fascinating. But I've also read, here's what I've noticed about you in talking to you on the phone. You're a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Women aren't so, they're not treated like they are in America. Or is that completely our mistake?
It's largely a mistake. And it's a complicated answer. I'll try to make it clear right now. Before this uprising and before the hijacking of what was a genuine call for a reform, that was only a brief period of time before other forces began to exert very terrible influence. Syria was the most secular country in the Middle East. Now, because of that, women in Syria had a great variety of choices, for instance, in how they wanted to dress and in how they wanted to practice their religion, be it Christian, Jewish, or Muslim. So you might have seen members of the same family, women in the same family, dressed in the latest fashions, the tightest jeans that you can imagine, or they might have been dressed very demurely with simply a veil surrounding the face so that the face can be seen but the hair is covered. Or they might have been very conservative women who were really covering up. But it's the woman's choice. There's a saying in Arabic that, if I translate it, means paradise lies at the feet of the mother. which means that the mother is the most revered person, and therefore all women, because all women could be mothers, are revered. I was extremely well protected and very much honored because I was a woman in Syria.
But
and that's something that doesn't come across at all.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But then you read about instances all the time in the popular press anyway, where women aren't treated with the kind of respect you just referred to.
Well, right now, in any area in which ISIS is in control, women are treated much as they might be treated in Saudi Arabia, where women are not allowed to drive cars and women must be dressed in black abaya or full cloaks all of the time. So in the areas of Syria which ISIS now controls, women are no longer free. But up until 2 years ago, they had great freedom. There were more women in university than men in Syria at the time that I left there in 2012. And that was true for a good decade or perhaps more.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about the misconceptions. I think that happens. I think these sorts of things snowball, and we get some idea. And I want to talk about more of these misconceptions. Deborah Felmuth is the author of Syria, Remember Me, on WGN.
Bear fans, join Chicago Tribune Sports Plus for a sports-only membership that includes award-winning coverage. Great perks and more at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus.
The girlfriends.
Hey, Jude, you know the stereotype of the 42-year-old guy living in his mom's basement?
Oh, I hope I don't.
Actually, it turns out there's plenty of young women who remain in their parents' homes until middle age. So let's talk about it. What?
I can't be here.
Oh, you won't be here to talk about it?
I'll be on a plane and I'll talk to someone about it.
Oh, I'll talk to Steve about it then.
That's right.
Kathy and Steve, Saturday, 10 to noon. On WGN.
Deborah, here's my next question for you. We were talking about some of the misconceptions, particularly as it pertains to women. How about the feeling we have in general about Syria? I mean, you say Syria to someone on the street today. In fact, and I know you don't want to get too much into the politics of all this, but my goodness, every presidential candidate has had a strong view about it, and on the Republican side especially, saying, don't let the refugees in. How do you feel about that? Who are most of these people that are refugees, and how can we protect against those infiltrating among them that are terrorists?
Right. Good questions, all of them. Some of them I can answer and some of them I probably can't, but I will try. The refugees are people who need our help, and we have, I believe, a moral and a holy responsibility to do anything that we can, particularly in the immediate term, to help them, because they are fleeing situations which are intolerable. However, I would like to say that most refugees actually want to return home, so that our greater moral responsibility is to do everything we can to prevent their country from being utterly destroyed. And they are leaving only because it is unsafe, not because they don't love their home. And their home is a very extraordinary country and a beautiful country. So it's very complicated when we say, what can we do to help? One of the arguments can very strongly be made for we should get out of Syria. We should encourage no more weapons being dropped into Syria, because weapons are only used to kill. They're not used to help. So when we continue to have weapons dropped to moderate rebels, and time again we have seen these fall into the hands of the quote-unquote wrong people, we are not helping the situation. Unfortunately, the Americans are not the only people who have their hands in some, effort to help, but very often complicating and making matters worse. The Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks, the French all have very, very different agendas and reasons they think the Syrian war should be solved or you know, changed according to their agendas, none of which are really going to come to pass. The Syrians themselves are the ones who need to be able to do it. And
but the
for
Syrians,
that to happen,
we need
to get out.
But on the other side of that coin is that if the Syrians, who clearly aren't able to do it for themselves, if ISIS controls even more of the region, then isn't that a bad thing, that ISIS, their influence would be growing and growing and growing, and we want to do something about that? And you left out the Russians and the English and many other countries as well. So
right, I shouldn't have left out the Russians or the Iranians. You're correct in that, absolutely. Everybody's got their hand in there right now.
Right.
And it certainly would be a bad thing if ISIS were to grow. However, I think that the competing ideologies that have gone in with an effort to make the war go the way they wanted it to go, be it America or Russia or any of the other players, has made matters worse. And so even though it is a, you know, it's a strong thing for me to say get out, I do believe that it's the place where we need to start, or at least certainly we need to stop weaponizing. We certainly need to stop weaponizing.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I
wrote
ahead.
The book because I wanted to try and give people a feel and a look. As you said, there are many, many photographs, and there's 200 color plates. A feel for the culture that is being destroyed. Because we only read these headlines, we only hear the pundits talking about the political situation, we don't really understand who is this extraordinarily diverse population, multi-ethnic and poly-religious. And so I think it's very important to humanize this. If we really feel the human element underneath the fabric of the culture, we may begin to extricate ourselves and say, wait a second, these are people, not statistics.
We only have a couple of minutes here. You could give a 3-hour answer to this, I'm sure, but how could this happen to a country so quickly, relatively speaking? And again, we have very little time here.
Well, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think the only reason it happened so quickly to this country was because many outside players became involved almost instantly. In fact, had laid the groundwork from before 2011 when the first uprising took place in Daraa. And that's a sad thing to say, and I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but I will say that having been in Syria at the time of the first uprising and continuing to be there through May of 2012, I can speak from experience that very rapidly foreign players came in and started to overturn. I wish that I could say that it was a homegrown revolution, because I am perfectly aware of the fact that Syria needs and needed then reform. Bashar al-Assad was certainly trying and had begun some of the economic, in particular, reforms that were needed. But more were needed, and they were needed faster. Educational reforms also desperately needed. I think one thing that Americans don't understand is, well, why doesn't democracy just take hold? And I think largely the reason is because the style of education, which is predominant in the larger Middle East and certainly in Syria, is not one that encourages people to think independently, And so, therefore, democracy becomes a challenge which they do not know how to handle.
Because
they have not trained their mind.
It's fascinating, and I'm cutting you off only because we're out of time. I mean, we could go on for hours here. I'd like to.
It's true.
At some point, I'm certainly keeping your phone number. Syria, Remember Me is the name of the book. Deborah Felmuth is the author. Where can folks get the book, Deborah?
The best place is on the website, SyriaRememberMe.com. Independent bookshops also on the East Coast will carry it, but it isn't on Amazon or any of the big box stores. So SyriaRememberMe.com is the best place.
We will.
It's a limited edition, so do, if you want a copy, order it now.
Okay, we will remember. SyriaRememberMe.com. Deborah Felmuth, the author, thank you so very much.
You're welcome, Steve. It's a pleasure talking with you.
At 2:33, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. I'm getting hungry, Roger.
Smell turkey.
Turkey time next. Right. After the news, so we hear from one turkey and then we eat. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I would not.
Didn't.
I did not say that.
I don't know. Wait, let me clear my ears out. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let me do that again.
Right.
Take two. It's 2:33 on WGN, 720 WGN Radio Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Here with the WGN News, it's Roger Badish. Roger's going to come in because look what I've got. Roger, can you see this?
Wait a minute. I'm looking. You have something in your hand. It is?
A bottle of tequila. Really good tequila.
Wow.
Yeah,
you really know how to.
But I've got cups in here too.
Yeah, wait a minute. Is there a party already in there?
Yes, there is.
Absolutely.
These guys are going to come back for New Year's, I believe. They've begun to celebrate already.
That's fantastic.
I'm going to sip it and taste it.
Is there a turkey in there too?
No. Well, except me, but that's about it. So hold on. We prepared a very, very technical production here.
Okay.
So let's do that first. Yeah. Nick DiGilio will never allow me again, I am sure, to fill in. This is Steve Dale. I'm here for Nick DiGilio. It's 2:40 on WGN Radio Chicago, and I'm sipping tequila. We're going to have a Mexican Thanksgiving. In the studio with us, it is Tony Estrada. From El Mariachi Restaurants and Tequila Bar. Oh, boy, Tequila Bar for sure. Uh-huh. And also from the Revolution Mexican Steakhouse and Tony Estrada, an owner of both of those places. Did I say your name, Alberto?
Alberto Mendez.
I said that, didn't I? You see, one sip of tequila and I'm in big trouble. And all
can't
I have
take
is
you anywhere. I'm kidding, you know.
No, you can come on in here. There's lots of cups actually.
Okay. A lot of space for you. Come on
okay,
in.
Okay. Okay.
Your newscast will never be the same. I can tell you that.
Wouldn't be the
some
first
more
time.
In here. Come on in.
So.
Con la raza.
What kind of tequila is this? Because I actually want to talk about this for a moment, Alberto.
Well, that's a Cabo Wawa tequila. It's a Blue Weber agave.
Well, they're all from so a real tequila's got to be from.
It's got to be Blue Weber.
Okay, explain that.
Well, here, to be honest, this is a man.
Okay, Tony.
Tony's from Jalisco.
Yeah. So explain why I just said yeah when he said you're from Jalisco.
Well, Jalisco's the home of the tequila. That's why we decided to name one of the restaurants El Mariachi Tequila Bar and Grill.
Uh-huh.
It's the home of
tequila
and
comes
mariachi,
from
so.
And it comes from nowhere else.
Nowhere else but Jalisco, correct.
Nowhere else in the world, just this one state in Mexico.
There's two or three other states in Mexico that tequila it's approved by the government to become tequila or to be tequila. As long as from the Weber agave.
Roger, you're welcome to join us here. Here's the bottle. And you know what? People talk about the rest of the bottle's for you.
Oh, yeah.
No.
That's for all you guys.
Have a sip. I will tell you. So I'm sipping this. You know, we think of tequila, we think of shots, you know, Tony.
Right.
But in fact, really good tequila, and there are three types of tequila, I believe, and you can describe them, really good tequila, you want to sip, like, I guess, I'm not a brandy fan, but people sip brandy. Is that right?
Correct, correct. Well, this one's aged 1 to 5 years in oak barrels, so that's what you kind of get.
Añejo?
It's an añejo, correct. Mm-hmm. So that's what you get. It's a good option to sip, you know, and just enjoy. You know, you don't want to take this as a shot, you know.
Right, because I really do enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, again, I'm no scotch or brandy person,
right?
But I believe it's like that in that there are different flavors, different kinds of tequila. Is that right?
Correct, correct. Yeah, definitely. This one's aged 8 to 12 years. The plants are 8 to 12 years. You know,
they need to be at least a minimum of 10 years,
right,
to be harvested. And then to be grind, and then to be cooked, or however the process happened.
Right.
So tell me the secret of choosing the right tequila to sort of sip on for a starter. What would you look for? Like Roger says, your microphone is on.
What's your favorite, Roger?
I'm not a hard liquor drinker. Have never been.
Mm-hmm. Until now.
No. I did, when I was in college, a liquor company, you know, tries to get kids to promote their brand. So
right.
Another brand of tequila came in, and I had parties for people, but I never drank it. So
I don't believe you there.
honest to goodness.
Yeah.
Honest to goodness. And so this will be my first.
Nice.
Get out of
here. It's not even an eye drop.
Come on, you need to fill the one up.
All right, taste it.
One eye drop.
Smell it first. Sniff it.
Ready?
Yeah, sniff it first.
I sniffed it already from the bottle. How could you not sniff it? I opened it up and it like, I'm feeling high already.
That definitely looks like an eye drop.
It is.
It is eye drop. You need to fill it to the top. To the rim.
At least a quarter of it.
Well, he does have to work until 4:30 or 5 this morning.
Roger. See that beer over there?
Yeah.
It needs more tequila.
The beard. Okay, well, you sip on the tequila. Okay, go ahead.
Go. Do it because now do I just drink it straight down, or do I let it wash over the front of my tongue,
yeah,
the back
you
of
let
my
it
tongue?
Sit in my tongue, exactly. Like the back of your
let
tongue.
It
just
back of your tongue.
Sit, yeah. And then you just
and then let it go down.
Yeah.
Now, if I start hiccuping, don't worry because I hiccup with
that's
hard
normal,
liquor.
Right?
All right, here we go.
That's easy. We can fix it. There is a there's citrus over there. There's lime.
Well, that he took it as a shot. He didn't really listen to us, did he?
I told him to.
I did listen to you.
You okay there, Roger?
We need some water.
We need a lot of water, apparently.
Oh, okay.
He's sweating.
It's not
that.
That bad.
That actually was kind of smooth.
It's smooth, see? I told you.
Yeah,
no, you're supposed to.
I let it go. I tried to bypass the tip of the tongue and go to the back of the tongue, but it's okay, thanks.
He's ready for another one. I think he's adapting to this.
I'm not so sure. So I want to talk about Thanksgiving.
Hey, Roger. Yeah. So far I have your first fan right now. She's saying,
uh-oh,
you're going to get really drunk really soon if you keep drinking like that.
No, I'm not going to drink like that. I'm not going to.
Is that right? On Facebook? Is that where you put it? Or
It's my beautiful girl out there.
Ah, but on where? Instagram, Facebook, where did you post it? He doesn't know.
He's got his own private channel.
Apparently he does. So tomorrow you can put your Thanksgiving leftovers on ice. Okay, WGN Radio, it is 2:49. Good morning. We are here with Alberto Mendez and Tony Estrada from El Mariachi Restaurants and Tequila Bar and Revolution Mexican Steakhouse. And, you know, everybody does that Butterball Hotline thing at this time of year. And I thought, I want to do something different. I'm here for Nick DiGilio. And I thought, I have to do a show justice and do something that maybe even he has never done before. So I thought, how about a Mexican Thanksgiving? Do they celebrate Thanksgiving, first of all, in Mexico? Or am I making something up, Tony?
Well, I mean, I'm sure everybody celebrates Thanksgiving, you know, different ways.
So, but not really. It's not really a Mexican holiday.
Well, we currently at home, we mix in a little bit of turkey, you know, with the mashed potatoes.
So you actually think about Thanksgiving in Mexico?
But we also mix in pozole, tamales. So it's kind of like a mixed theme, you know, type
so
of thing.
So today, on Thanksgiving, people will be celebrating in Mexico?
It's not huge, but And more than they thank God, you know, for...
So three people will be doing it, in other words. That's okay. Yeah. But Mexican-Americans do that, certainly, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so is there... Is there, Alberto, a version of that?
Absolutely.
That we can... Okay, so get your pens and papers out, friends, or your computers.
Here we go.
And get ready to type this. Explain what it is that we're making.
All right, so we're making a... what's the best way that I can describe it?
I don't know.
So it's going to be a pavo en adobo.
A what?
Right? Pavo, which means, turkey.
Okay.
In adobo.
Okay.
So adobo usually tends to mean a thick rub. When it comes to dry chilies to be rehydrated by either liquid or oil or anything else again. And this recipe, it comes from the state of Puebla in Mexico. And Tony happens to be Mexican-American. So as a kid, I'm sure he grew up with American tradition of the turkey, but at the same time with his parents being from Mexico, celebrating Acción de Gracias, which is what we call in Spanish. Of course, he had tostadas and tamales and all of that. So in Mexico, we do celebrate that, but not with the turkey. But yes, we do have a recipe for that.
And that is?
And this is...
Okay, get ready.
All right, this is it. Here it is.
And we can try to put this up on our Facebook page, too.
Definitely.
All right. For one 10 to 14 pound turkey, you're going to need 6 pasilla chilies, 30 cloves of garlic. You're gonna chop them up. Yes, you need a lot of garlic.
Yeah, of course.
Garlic is good.
A quarter of a cup of orange juice, 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, a tablespoon to 3 tablespoons of honey. It depends on how sweet you want this to be.
Mm-hmm.
A tablespoon of sugar, a tablespoon of black peppercorns, obviously a 12 to 14 pound turkey, a large onion. You're going to cut this in 4 pieces. One orange, you're going to cut this in 4 pieces as well. Half cup of either red wine or port or sherry or even beer.
Okay.
Cerveza. Or tequila.
Of course.
Half cup of...
tequila does go with everything,
right?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes.
2 tablespoons of butter, 4 cups of broth, either chicken broth or turkey broth or even beef broth. 1.5 tablespoons of cornstarch. This is going to be for your gravy at the end. Half tablespoon of nutmeg. Nutmeg is delicious on any other sauce. 2 tablespoons of parsley, fresh, preferable. So what you're going to do for the recipe, you're going to start with you're going to toast your chilies. You're going to soak them with one of your chicken broth or beef broth for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just so it softens up, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that they soften them up. You're going to roast your onions. You're going to roast the garlic. And you're going to toast the rest of the other spice ingredients. And what you're going to do, you're going to save your spices and you're going to grind them at the end. But as your chilies get soaked, you're going to get your turkey ready. And you're going to set it in a roasting pan with the breast upside down. That's one of the tricks.
Why?
Why? Because what you're going to do is you're going to hold the moisture into the breast. Here in the States, or not, I don't want to say Americans, but what happens is that when you roast your turkey with the back down, what happens is that all of the moisture, all the juice from legs and the breast, mm-hmm. it just leaks out or bleeds out, and it doesn't stay moist. So what you want to happen is flip it upside down, roast it that way, and you'll see the difference.
Now, interesting.
For your stuffing, leave the stuffing to on the side. You can do sausage. You can do anything you want to do. Your family favorite stuffing recipe. So that way you don't make your family slightly sick or sleepy, because that's what usually happens. When you roast your turkey... what happens is that the enzyme or the juices from the turkey, they don't get the temperature, they don't get to be cooked at the temperature that it needs to be. what happens is that you get sick or you get really sleepy, and at the end of the dinner you're like,
well, turkey has that amino acid in it.
That's exactly
called something. I'll think of it.
I was talking about it on the way here, and I can't remember the name.
I'll think of it.
That you post that.
I'll post it. Yes. So that's the recipe.
Pretty much, that's the recipe. And really, the recipe is breast upside down.
L-tryptophan, right? Tryptophan.
Sure.
Okay, I think that's what it is.
Yeah,
that's in turkey, and that makes us sleepy.
And not just that, and you want to pair this with either either a Mexican wine or some really awesome Mexican beer, either something dark,
Negra Modelo,
Victoria, or Bohemia. Oh my goodness, Bohemia right now could be just nice. Besides the shot of this tequila here.
How long do you cook it for?
If it's a 14-pounder, you want to do this about 165 degrees for 3 to 4 hours. Well, first of all, you're going to start on high for 400 to 500 degrees for at least 40 minutes, and then you're going to drop the temperature to 165 to 200 degrees for about 3 hours.
All right. Well, you can find everything that Alberto just said if you go to
You have the recipe.
I have the recipe. You could also go to, I Periscoped you. So you can go to Steve Dale Pets. And if you're on Periscope, you could find it that way. If you're on Twitter, you can find it that way as well. More of a Mexican Thanksgiving celebration on WGN. From Revolution Mexican Steakhouse and El Mariachi Restaurants, we have Tony Estrada in the studio, Alberto Mendez. And these restaurants are where, Tony? Where are they at?
They are on all along Broadway. We have El Mariachi Restaurant at 3420 North Broadway. We have Revolution Steakhouse across the street at 3443 North Broadway. Then a couple blocks down north, we have El Mariachi Tequila Bar and Grill at 3906 Broadway.
That's at about Sheridan.
Yeah.
But at Revolution Steakhouse, exciting news! Olé! You do that very well. Coming out, huh?
Absolutely. We have an exciting new menu coming up in about middle December. Mm-hmm. It's going to be better than ever, besides that we're one of the first Mexican steakhouses in Chicago.
The first.
Mexican.
Yeah. And we just celebrated a big event, and you had all these dignitaries there.
The ambassador general of
Mexico, and you had these other huge dignitaries.
Yes.
And it was to celebrate the anniversary of the revolution in Mexico.
Right, exactly. It was really exciting. It was great to meet all these people from South America, Chile, Panama, Ecuador, Argentina, Bolivia.
Yeah.
Canada.
I was honored to be at that event. It was
quite an event. You were there.
I sure was. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. Happy anniversary, guys. Also... Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Definitely.
Thank you. It is 3 o'clock on the Wet Dog Nose here with the WGN News. Mr. Roger Batter.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
3:35, Kathy Garver will be here, the author of Surviving Sissy. No, that's not right. She's here. Is this what happens, Roger, at 3 in the morning to people?
You got it, buddy.
Oh, geez.
Especially after you had all that tequila.
I did. I just had a little sip.
The bottle was half empty when you gave it to me. Come on.
At 3:35, David Fry will be here.
There you go.
Talking about the National Dog Show. He is Mr. Dog Show announcer. I also want to hear your turkeys of the year. We'll get to that after 4 o'clock. And we do have on the phone a lady who ought to recognize this music. I bet you do, Kathy Garver.
I've heard that tune before, I believe. Yes, a couple times.
The name of the book, and you're here now. The name of the book is called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of a Life in Hollywood. Our telephone number, 312-981-7200. You can text us at that same number if you have questions for this woman who's been around Hollywood for... Dare I ask how many years?
We'll just say a couple decades.
A couple of decades is right. I mean,
like 3 or 4.
Yeah, well,
five.
You did start legitimately when you were very young with Family Affair, and that's where I'll begin this conversation. I did start before that. Right.
That's why I say decades, because one of the first things I did was the Ten Commandments movie, not the silent version. It's not that many decades, but yes, I've been in the business many years.
And then, I mean, in reading your book, there's so many fascinating sort of opening up behind the curtain stories about Hollywood. One of them was an opportunity you had to work with Bette Davis. You took advantage of that and you show up and it turns out it's like me and you talking now almost, huh?
Well, I was very excited to do this radio show, and it was Whispering Streets, a Bette Davis anthology show. So I think I was just like 11, and my mom took me to ABC on Hollywood near Vine. And so I said, oh, we get to see Bette Davis. This is so exciting. And so we were late. We finally get there, and we said, well, where's Miss Davis? And she says, well, she's not here. Oh, she'll be here soon. No, she won't be here. Why? Because she records everything in New York, and we're in Los Angeles. So that's what happened. I was a little disappointed about that. Many disappointments in Hollywood.
Well, I was just going to ask that. Is that kind of like how it goes? You have to kind of roll with the punches. And those who survive do so maybe because of talent, maybe because of a really good agent, maybe because of simply good luck, but also that ability to kind of roll with the way it goes.
And to persevere no matter what happens, to understand that it's very cyclical, that sometimes you have a lot of jobs and sometimes you have no jobs, and to understand that fact about the business of show business.
Very well said, and I understand that. For you, that biggest lucky break came with this show called Family Affair, which was a huge, huge hit in its day. And you played one of the three children. The other were Buffy and Jody. You were Sissy on the show. And then there was Mr. French. And I bring that up for a reason, because this wasn't in your book, but I happen to know the person who initially tried out for that role is a Chicagoan, Paul Lisnick. He didn't get the role, but he wanted it.
You are too funny, Steve.
They said he wasn't. They said he wasn't right for it. He was too old. But that that aside, tell me how Family Affair came about.
Well, it for me or the show itself?
For the WGN TV's Paul Lisnick, and Paul and I are very good friends, by the way, is why I say that. Yeah, how it came about and how your involvement in this show came about.
Well, I do have to comment, though, on Paul, because I did meet you at the Black Cat Gala, and I understood when I first met you that you and Paul were friends, but you didn't look as old as he said you were.
You were so kind to come to this event, a benefit for Treehouse Humane Society, and your involvement with companion animals is clear. I mean, you've even served on the board of directors of a shelter. But tell me about Family Affair.
Okay, and I'm sorry, we got derailed here. The show or me?
Paul will derail any time. How the show came... You see, you just mention his name and we get completely off the topic. You see what he does, even if he's not here. The show, how did it come about for you?
Well... The Family Affair was produced by Don Federson, who had My Three Sons, and that was a big success. So he and some wonderful writers, Ed Hartman and Don, got together and created another show. And they had it cast. Actually, Cherry Thomas was the one that replaced Paul after he auditioned and kind of lost the role. And so Sebastian Cabot got the role of the Manny, as we would call him now. And he was the gentleman's gentleman to a very suave bachelor, Brian Keith. That part was originally to go to Glenn Ford, but I'm sure you would have gotten it, Steve, had you auditioned.
Well, you talk about Brian Keith. Yes. Yeah, of course. You talk about Brian Keith in the book, and you talk about what I remember him from the Disney movies and, of course, from Family Affair. I don't remember him as being one of the great actors, but you say, and you've worked with many, he was one of the best actors you've ever worked with.
Oh, absolutely. And you probably did not know him as a great actor because he abhorred publicity. He was not a publicity hound. He wanted just the work, and he did that supremely well. He was in The Mountain Men. He played Teddy Roosevelt and was just phenomenal in that. And then he was in a lot of men's movies. And then when he started to work for Disney and did The Parent Trap and with Six You Get Egg Roll with Doris Day, he showed his comedic side and his very warm side because he loved kids. So he actually was a movie star in those terms. Don Feddersen had gotten Fred McMurray to do My Three Sons, who also was a star and was in a lot of the Disney movies too, Shaggy Dog. But before that, he was doing some big dramatic parts. And usually the stars at that time, and we started our show in 1966. It will be our anniversary next year, 50 years,
wow.
Which I don't understand since I'm 39. But there it is, 50 years. I can't even really say that without a catch in my throat. However, at that time, in order to get movie stars to do that horrid little picture on television, he promised the star that they would only have to work 30 days for 32 episodes. Not only that, they would give them a piece of the show. Now, this financial piece of the show was something pretty new, and that was that proverbial offer that the stars could not refuse.
Yeah, much more to come with Kathy Garver. And also, the text that I'm getting more than any other question, whatever did happen to Buffy and Jody? We will find out and also learn about you, because you're a cookbook author too, what you're doing for Thanksgiving. Can you hold on a moment, Kathy?
I can.
All right. This week on Chicago's Best, get ready for a fiesta, because Brittany and Elliot are going to find the best Mexican eats and treats, Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Kathy Garver is here. Kathy Garver is the author of Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of a Life in Hollywood. Kathy, the question I'm getting more than anything else texted to us, 312-981-7200, is whatever happened to Buffy and Jody? Those are the two that played the children, and it turns out not only weren't they twins in real life, there was an age difference between them.
Yes, and who was the elder?
The elder was the girl who played Buffy, Anissa. Anissa, yes.
Anissa Jones, yes. But see, I was going to give you an A. Now you only got a C. You got the first part right.
You're
but,
tough.
All right. I am.
Jody was
this
Johnny.
An easy interview at 1 a.m. my time in California.
Which I thank you for. Johnny Whitaker was the one who played the boy, right?
Right. And after the show, he went on and he did another series, Sigmund and the Sea Monster, and then he did Tom Sawyer. He played that eponymous role. And then he went on a Mormon mission, came back, got married, got divorced, got on drugs, unfortunately, on alcohol, which kind of ruined his life for a while. And he had no money. And so his parents and family did an intervention and said, look, if you don't get off drugs, we're going to divorce you as a family. So that kind of got through to him, and he's off drugs, and he is helping other people get off drugs.
So that's the good story. However,
yes. And then, unfortunately, Anissa did not have that strong family behind her. After the show, she really did not want to stay in show business, turned down the role in The Exorcist, and wanted to just be a quote-unquote normal teenager, if that is such a word. And she got on drugs as well. But unfortunately, when she was 18, she had a lethal cocktail of a mixture of different kinds of drugs and passed away, which was very sad. I have another book coming out in March called Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? And really what happens to some of these child actors. And it's very difficult from being in the limelight at one point and then not in the limelight and making that transition over to a successful adult.
Is it harder today than it was back when you were a child star and you were? Or is it about the same?
In some ways, I think it is better because my dear friend Paul Peterson, who was in the Donna Reed Show, had an organization called A Minor Consideration, which enabled the child who worked to have some money left over when they were 18. And it was named after the Coogan and the Coogan Law, because Jackie Coogan, when he was of age, had absolutely no money because his parents spent it all. Hmm. And many of the parents of child actors just look at the child as their own personal bank and just withdraw whatever they want, whenever they want. And so with this new law, a certain amount, a percentage, has to be set aside into a Coogan account that cannot be touched until the child is 18. So at least they have some money. Johnny did not have as much money as he should have when he turned 18.
Well, at least Jackie Coogan, one could say, had a wonderful career. At some point in time, his career took off again, or at least enough for him to make a living. He was a frequent guest on TV. He's appeared as a character actor in some movies, etc. He seemed to always be working. However, it wasn't the case with Anissa, right? She and Johnny Whitaker ended up with substance abuse issues, which is not uncommon. So how did you, the name of the book, in fact, is called Surviving Sissy. You did just that. What was your secret that you were able to survive, thrive, you're working today, where that's not the case with so many others?
Well, one, I had a very supportive family. They saved every single thing for me. Two, I had a wonderful education. I graduated from UCLA with a degree in speech. This is why I talk so much. You're wondering, does this girl ever shut up? No.
You're great.
And so I, with a minor in psychology, I got a master's degree in theater arts. I went to the London School of Dramatic Art. And so an education helps a lot and develops other skills so that when I wasn't acting, then I could, still in the entertainment realm, if I wasn't on TV, I could do a play. If I didn't do a play, I developed a voiceover career. And I never took drugs. I drink a lot.
No. I don't believe you.
I drink a lot. Well, I live in Northern California near Napa, so one can hardly refrain from having a chilled glass of Chardonnay every night, you know, every night with dinner.
Well, I think that's okay. You didn't end up in trouble, which is a good thing. What are you going to be doing? Well, first of all, tell me about you and your family today. And also, I want to know what you're doing for Thanksgiving.
Well, I have a beautiful 24-year-old son that I had a little late in life. And he's in his fifth year at a two-year college. He did not quite get the idea that this was
okay.
Only for 2 years. But he's working at the bank, and instead of leaving home, he has invited his girlfriend to live with us. So I don't think I'll ever be an empty nester. So they live at the house, but they insisted that we have our traditional Thanksgiving dinner. And now I was just in Chicago. I didn't get home until late Monday. So Tuesday, I said, oh, I guess Thanksgiving is in 2 days. So I went to the store, and tonight I made some fabulous cranberry preserves with cranberries and currants and walnuts and a Fuji apple in there.
Ooh.
It has its own pectin, so it gives it, you know, some body and helps it gel. And the turkey is chewing in the refrigerator, and the table is set. So I've just moved right along, having caviar pie, which is extravagant, but
what?
Absolutely wonderful.
Whoa. Caviar pie?
Yes, you have hard-boiled eggs, you mix it with a little butter, and that's like that makes a crust. And then you have cream cheese and sour cream and onions, and then the caviar on top. So then when you take a piece of brown bread or a nice little cracker, you just have the whole little package right there to enjoy.
Just rolls off your tongue, caviar pie. I'd never even heard of that. The name of the book, Surviving Sissy. I think that's a California thing. Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of a Life in Hollywood.
Kathy, and where can you get it, Steve?
I imagine wherever books are sold, like Amazon.com, am I right?
You can get it there, and also at my website, which is KathyGarver.com.
All right, perfect. KathyGarver.com. Thank you so very much for staying up so late, even in California, for us. I do appreciate it. It was a pleasure to meet you in person, and I'm certain we will talk more. Thank you, Kathy.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
The same to you and your family. If there's a dog show on TV, it seems David Fry is there broadcasting the dog show. And after 4 o'clock, we'll talk to David in just a minute, but after 4 o'clock, the Turkeys of the Year. I have nominations, people, I don't know, dozens of them from Facebook. Roger, I want yours as well. I want our producer, Jan's, as well. That's coming up after 4 o'clock on WGN.
So when I think about turkeys, I think about this man on the phone, David Fry. Have you not been introduced that way before?
That's a first, but probably on in the media, but certainly not in life. You get that all the time.
He is a good friend and the broadcaster of the Westminster Dog Show for how long?
Well, I'm coming up on my 27th year this year. How
amazing,
about that?
Amazing. And for, what, 13, 14 years, the Thanksgiving Day Dog Show presented by Purina?
Well, for the National Dog Show,
yes,
it will be our 14th year. We, John O'Hurley and I, have partnered for every one of those. So we're excited about that, too.
So if you're watching a dog show on television, whether you like it or not, you're watching this guy. I mean, and have been for decades now. Dave, if I were to have come to you, I don't know, 35 years ago, and I would have said, you are going to be the broadcaster of nearly every national dog show, including the dog show, ironically called the National Dog Show. Would you have thought, I'm going to be a dog show announcer?
I thought, you know, my career path was kind of paved with AstroTurf because I grew up in a football coach's family, and I thought maybe that's the direction I was going to be going. Never had a dog as a kid growing up, but finally got a dog when I was in college. My girlfriend in college, as I was moving into my house, said, let's get a dog. And I said, okay, what kind? She says, how about an Afghan hound? I said, what's that? And we got the dog. 3 weeks later, the girl left. The dog stayed. It was the best thing that could have happened to all of us. And I ended up getting involved in dog shows from that. So,
and you are kind of, I mean, you're very famous anyway, but in the Afghan hound world, within the world of dog shows, you're pretty well known. You've had a lot of success over the years with Afghan hounds, and you had one dog. Who's Zoomin' Whom or something? Do I remember
named
right?
Named after the Aretha Franklin song. Her, Zoomy was the top-winning female in the history of the breed when she retired back in about 1990. So we had a nice run with her, and that is how I really ended up meeting all the Westminster people who asked me if I would be interested in doing their television. And I said, sure. So we did an audition. They liked it. I liked it. And I signed on, and I said, this will be fun for a couple of years, and here it is, 27 years later and 26 years later and doing my 27th show. So
pretty cool. But you know what, Dave? What you have done, it's more than broadcasting dog shows, and you do a very good job at it. In fact, you're the best at what you do. But it's more than that. It's the other messages that you're able to communicate during the dog show. I would lose count if I tried to count how many times you talk about the human-animal bond, how many times you talk about dogs being members of the family, how many times you talk about canine welfare and care. I mean, it seems to me that's almost what you live for.
Well, you know, when I started doing the show in 1990, it really, the emphasis was on the fact that it was and still is to this day the world's greatest dog show, featuring all these great purebred dogs in the dog show world. But I believe that over time I've helped bring it around to being, in the generic sense, almost a celebration of the dogs in our lives. That ultimately my phrase for it has become, the real best in show dog is the one that's sitting next to you on the couch at home. So reach over and hug that dog and watch our show and have fun with us.
Yeah, and I think you've effectively done that. And that's the other thing about dog shows. So you're watching the dog show at home, and statistically you probably do have a dog, only because, not that people, this is the other, I wonder if you have any data on this. Do you know how many people watch dog shows that don't have dogs?
Well, I think probably about two-thirds of them do have dogs. Two-thirds to three-quarters of them do have a dog in their family in some way. But we get a lot of people who just enjoy seeing the dogs. They don't necessarily have them in their family. But our audience skews about two-thirds female.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse, a little older probably than a lot of other audiences, probably in the early 50s, mid-50s. That number is coming down over the last few years with our emphasis on social media and things that have brought us a lot more new viewers. But we think people are interested in dogs whether they've got one or not, because they're fun. You know, who looks at a dog without smiling? Nobody. And I think that's what these shows allow us to do. They allow us to say, hey, look at this. Isn't this fun? What do you think that dog's thinking?
You know, something just occurs to me. So there's science out there to demonstrate that if you walk down the street and just see a dog, unless you've had a bad experience at some time with a dog in your life, you can't help but smile. I mean, we evolved with dogs, quite literally. Lots of research on that. Cornell just came out a couple of days ago with a study that indicated just that, again, verifying previous studies. If every time you saw me, Dave, I hit you over the head with a baseball bat, I'm thinking you might avoid me. If on the other hand, if every time you saw me, I gave you a $100 bill, I'm thinking you'd do anything in the world to see me. And if watching a dog show makes us feel good, well, no wonder we turn on the next dog show.
Well, I think anybody who has a dog knows that. You know, when you come home at night and the dog's waiting for you there with their tail wagging and bringing you the ball or bringing you something to play with, that we know interacting with a dog makes you feel better. And as you say so well, and I've heard you say it a lot of places, science is now backing that up. We now know that your heart rate slows down, your blood pressure goes down, the flow of the good hormones, the endorphins, if you will, increases and makes you feel better. So we know that it makes you feel better. What we've done now is extend that into healthcare facilities and knowing that and showing that helps improve the healing process, helps make you feel better, and helps get your mind off some challenges that you may be facing, which is just enough in a lot of cases.
You know, we've done TV segments. Nice transition there, my friend, because we've done TV segments about exactly what you're talking about together, where you are involved with an organization. I'm on your advisory board for it, and honored to be. Talk about this organization called Angel on a Leash and what you do in this. It's incredible. Talk about that.
Well, Angel on a Leash is a therapy dog organization. We create and administer therapy dog programs in healthcare facilities around the country. And it really is taking all this stuff that we've learned about what dogs can do for the healing process and gotten them into these healthcare facilities so they can help these people. And it's not necessarily something that's going to make somebody well overnight. We kind of refer to it as a miracle of the moment. We take their mind off whatever their challenges may be as they smile and interact with the dog. And maybe it's somebody who hasn't had much of an opportunity to smile recently, or maybe they haven't felt like talking, or maybe they just don't feel like anything. And we give them an opportunity to think about something other than the challenges that they're facing. And it makes for a great thing for everybody concerned. I can't tell you how many times a parent has said to me, as my dog is interacting with their child, their child with cancer at the Ronald McDonald House, for example, and said to me, that's the first time she's smiled all week. And that means, you know, my friend Bill Sullivan, who's the executive director for the Ronald McDonald House in New York City, he says all the time, when a child is sick, the parents are sick. So we got to take care of the parents, too. We're aimed at the kids, but by helping the kids smile and feel better, we're helping the parents, too.
Well, that's really a incredibly important point. So, you know, I love your term. I've not heard you use it before, miracle of the moment. I think that absolutely describes it. But having done animal-assisted therapy myself at one point for several years, we've seen miracles, too. And I think that if – and I'm not sure miracle is the right word, because we're now beginning to understand what canines can do. And I think we're only beginning to understand all of this. I mean, as one example – and anyone who's done this kind of work has probably many examples. I'm sure you have dozens. You know, but one for me is that we were told the goal, it was a gunshot victim, a young man. And we were told the goal was for him to simply toss a tennis ball to our dog, but to use, I don't remember if it was left hand or right hand to do it, whichever hand was affected by the injury. And he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing for a variety of reasons. I don't know what they were, in therapy, for whatever reasons. Well, all we had to do is get the dog and the ball in his hand, and once he was able to grip it, which wasn't easy for him, but once he was able to do that, it took all of, I think, 5 seconds, if that, for him to toss the ball to our dog, who brought it back to him. Well, now you've got a big smile on his face because the dog brings it back and says, do it again. Sure enough, he does it again and again and again. And this particular dog wasn't our dog, but I'm telling you, they had one very tired dog at the end of all this. But that affected his life because he was able to do that. Maybe a week later, he would have been able to do that anyway. Who knows? But the family was astounded. So the family feels better. But boy, oh boy, it might have changed this guy's life.
Hey, that's a beautiful story. But I'll tell you what else. You made the physical therapist smile, too, because you and your dog, or whoever's dog it was, got that guy to do something that he wasn't really willing or excited about doing. You know, it's boring, it hurts, it's whatever. And they said, geez, I don't really feel like doing this range of motion exercises. Well, put a dog in front of them, put a brush in their hands, and suddenly they're doing what they want. And I've had, similar to what parents say to me about their kids smiling, I've had a physical therapist say, you just got him to do something that I've been trying to get him to do for 3 days. So it's good all around. It's good for the profession, the medical professionals who are involved in it too, because they see the great value in having our dogs involved in that kind of treatment.
So regarding animal-assisted therapy and animal-assisted activities, if you could look into a crystal ball and say, okay, 5 years from now, this is what I want this industry. I'm not sure industry is the right word, because we think of a lot of, you know, for-profit giant conglomerates when we say industry, and that's not what this is about. It's about volunteers greatly, but we'll call it an industry. Where do you see it going?
I think we have to be very careful that it doesn't get out of control and that we are policing the dogs in the facilities in a way that we know that they are and will continue to be well-trained, healthy, well-insured, if you will, and it's a factor of this day and age, and the people, their human partners, the therapy dog team is a partner, a dog and a human, that their people are well-trained to keep the dog out of trouble, to put them in a position to succeed, and we have to work hard at that in the coming years. And we've kind of gone through, I think we all in this world, the therapy dog world, agree, we've gone through a spell where everybody wanted to be a therapy dog. And we tried to get more and more people involved in it, but eventually some people find out that it's not the right thing for them. Maybe their dog doesn't like poking, prodding, body slamming, screaming kids, and it just didn't work out for them. But if your dog does like those things, they can do a lot of good things with the kids. Or if they don't like it, we can send them to extended care where the mood is a little bit more somber, a little more sedate. They don't have to worry about that.
So I think what you're saying in a nutshell is that as word got out about this, idea of dogs going to facilities such as the ones we're talking about, including senior citizen centers, including nursing homes, including Alzheimer's centers, including Veterans Administration hospitals, including all hospitals of any kind, including children's hospitals and rehabilitation centers and much more, that more people got involved. But the people got involved for their own often because they want to do the right thing and often because they enjoy it, but it was about their ego and maybe they didn't have the right dog to do this, and there was no, and there still is no national testing for these dogs.
Well, there are a number of organizations that are somewhat similar in the things that they test, but they're not all the same, and they all argue and disagree about, you know, we really ought to do this, or we really should include this or not this. Should we feed a raw food diet is probably the hot topic now. There are a lot of medical facilities who say, if your dog is fed a raw food diet, they can't come into our home.
And there's a reason for that. Yeah, but there is a reason for that, you know. So, yes, I agree with you about it, and I think that it would be great if everyone could get together. This organization actually has a Chicago connection, your organization, Angel on a Leash.
We are involved with the Shriners Hospital for Children in Chicago with the rainbow therapy animals, and we've created with them, in cooperation with them, we've created a pilot program that we can take into Shriners hospitals all over North America. There's 22 of them, and start a program with the principles and the policies and procedures that we've put together and learned together over the years, and create a great program at just about any facility.
Well, I hope that happens. Rainbow here is a great organization, but we're here to talk about the National Dog Show presented by Purina. We'll get to that after these on WGN. Don't move. Sit. Stay. Back with Mr. David Fry. He is Mr. Dog Show. If you are watching a dog show on television, there is no question, there is no doubt, you are watching this man right here. And now you can see what he looks like. Are you watching? David Fry is here. It's always an honor to talk to you. You are my turkey man. Because I think of you, I think of turkey. Because the National Dog Show presented by Purina is on when?
It's on Thanksgiving Day.
Yes.
From noon until 2 every year. This will be our 14th year. It's a great part of the family holiday now over the years. Over these 14 years, we think people come together and say, while you're in there working on the turkey, we're going to be out here watching the Doberman fly around the ring. So.
Yeah, and that dog show, I'll tell you, the National Dog Show presented by Purina is seen by 20-something million people now or something?
Unbelievable. We hit about 25 million people last year. And even we rebroadcast it from time to time, and I think this year that's on the schedule as well for a Saturday night rebroadcast. And that adds to our audience a couple of million people. But it's huge numbers to be able to get our messages out to that kind of an audience, to those many people, I think is very important to what we do.
So I'm going to ask you your prediction about who might win the show. I have a prediction for you. With that many people watching, you know who's going to turn up this year at the show? Donald Trump. Just to get the audience.
I go visit Donald Trump every year the day after the dog show in Westminster. We take our winner on sort of a world media tour. And he invited us 6 years ago to come visit him in his office with the winner, and we did, and we've done it every year since. He's a very gracious, humble man, nice to everybody when we come visit. We have a great time there. So politics aside, if you can say that at this point, he's great to us, and I consider him a friend.
Does the dog who wins ever have a comb-over that is like Mr. Trump's?
Mr. Trump stood there 1 year with the winning dog, which happened to be a Pekingese, and he asked the question of the media. He says, who has better hair, him or me? So he has a sense of humor about himself and about us, and we have a great time with it.
At Westminster, typically it is the terrier that wins. I don't know about the National Dog Show presented by Purina. Is there a breed that seems to do better or a group that seems to do better than any other?
We have had more winners from the terrier group than any other group.
Again,
for the National Dog Show.
Again,
so,
those terriers.
So it kind of follows a little bit what we've seen at the Westminster Kennel Club, where 40-some of the 107 or 108 best in show winners over the years have been from the terrier group. So terriers tend to get a lot of attention at dog shows. They just have this whole attitude about them that I think makes them good in the ring, because they're always on their toes looking for trouble, as it were. And I think that gives them a little edge in the ring, because they're not so worried about what's going on with their handler or other people around them, but they are ready to find something to go after as a great hunter of varmints and trouble They want to be right in the middle of it all.
Well, speaking of getting into trouble, those who might not be members of FanDuel, is that what it's called? I don't know if you can bet on the Westminster Dog Show like you can, or I meant to say the National Dog Show presented by Purina, or either one of them like you can on a football game or a baseball, basketball game. But we've got you. We've got
well,
you.
Yes, you do.
So who do you think might do well?
Well, I don't know. I think there's a number of very good show dogs out there, and there always are. The number one dog in the country right now is a German Shepherd and has been doing a lot of winning. I'm sure there'll be some terriers there. There's a great Skye Terrier out that's done a lot of winning. So it really just depends on who's there and who has its best day. It's like, you know, Michael Jordan didn't score 46 points every time out. So let's see. The dogs are the same way as athletes. Some of them may not have liked the water in the hotel last night or may have eaten a pizza off the table when nobody was looking. Things like that, that these are stories we hear all the time. But they're being judged on the day, and if they're having their moment of inspiration when the judge is looking at them, then they might have a great chance to go best in show.
So is the dog that does well in dog shows in general a showman?
Part of the deal. I mean, we talk about personality and charisma. I don't know if those are anthropomorphic sort of sounding words when you give them to a dog, but there's an old-time dog show judge who once told me it's a dog show and you gotta show. And there's a lot of great, you know, the first thing out there, they're all going to be good specimens or great specimens of their own breed. They're going to have all the things that make them a great terrier or a great German Shepherd or a great Afghan Hound. But if they don't have some sort of personality in the ring that's appropriate for their breed, then it doesn't matter how good they look or how nice they are, because they've got to be a show dog.
Well, following on Thanksgiving Day, which is today, following the Macy Parade is the National Dog Show presented by Purina. This man will be the voice you hear when the dog show is actually on. So go get some sleep. You deserve to have a little bit of that. Or may I say, and please don't be offended, a cat nap. Mr. David Fry, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Always nice to be on with you.
Well, at least as good as it gets. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Couple minutes after 4 o'clock on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Thank you very much, Roger. It is 4:10 on WGN Radio. Steve Dale here for Nick DiGilio. Roger, I don't understand. I do understand the anger, but tearing down the Christmas tree or trying to, they were not successful. And I don't understand the correlation there, what the message is in doing that. Or surrounding a CTA bus and just people on the bus being late, and destroying Chicago police bicycles. I just do not comprehend. I understand their anger, but I don't understand how that helps. Also, what I notice is that in watching television, I've not been at any of these protests, but it's almost a game of sorts. I mean, first of all, it's not thousands of people. I'm sure they are angry, but it seems as though they're there for the cameras in a way, and also there for the phones. So people who either live nearby or just, I don't know why, they'd come down to watch the protest are just recording it on their phones. They're periscoping it, putting it on YouTube, on Facebook, just because you can do that today. But they're not there because they're angry. They're there because they want to put it all on their phone. I don't understand. Maybe you can explain some of this to me.
Well, let's start with the tree. The video that we've seen from a couple of different angles shows people trying to grab the lights at the bottom of the tree and pulling them off the tree. That was the extent from what we could see on the videos that other people posted, as you said, online. But some of the other protesters that were with the people pulling the lights told them to stop.
Oh, really?
And, yes.
Good.
And there were a couple of police officers around, and they very slowly and carefully just walked towards the people pulling the lights, and they ran away. So I think, not getting into their heads, but some people may speculate that because just after announcing the release of the video, the mayor went to the tree lighting the other day.
Right.
And I think that is symbolic of what a lot of protesters are feeling, is frustration with what they consider to be a cavalier type attitude by the city about what the videos show, and the fact that it took nearly a year for those videos to become public through a legal procedure asking for freedom of information, where the videos had to be released. Now, we found out yesterday that video from four of the other police cars involved in the incident have been released, but video from three other cars have not. So
now, I heard the video could not be from the others' cars because it's simply not there because of malfunction, quote unquote. I mean, did they malfunction, or that the cars were not in position to really see anything worth seeing?
And again, that's one of the problems that a lot of people have brought up. A couple of the videos, actually the dash cam videos, the cars, when they pull up, seem to angle off to the side, and you don't see anything.
Do you really think that was done on purpose? I don't.
I don't know. Because I think the...
How could they have known what was going to happen?
Well, they couldn't have known, but I think it might have been procedure that if you've got someone that, like this case, where he was walking down the street, you try to cordon it off so he can't really go anywhere.
Right. It had nothing to do with people... The officers thinking that if something does go down, I don't want them to see bad stuff on a dash cam video. I don't believe they're racing to an emergency and are thinking on those terms.
Well, it's either way, the video is there. The video is very graphic.
The
video shows exactly what happened. That's where it stands right now. Now, for the protesters, again, they're trying to make a statement, I think, that they don't like the way this has all unfolded. They don't like that it took almost a year to file charges. I think the protesters consider the timing of the charges, the timing of the release of the video, to be questionable. And it just doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
I understand.
I think that's the frustration that they're trying to express as they march this time downtown from last night and near the expressway. And I think they're getting their message across. This is now a national stage for the protest.
Well, that's another thing. So we're watching this on CNN, Fox News, and all the others, and we're watching 50 or 60 people. I mean, in the meantime, I think there are more important stories going on elsewhere. Now, listen, if the protest, and I hope they do not, eventually grow, swell to hundreds of people or thousands of people, maybe different story. Or bad things happen. Not that I want bad things to happen. Of course, I do not. But then it becomes maybe a news story. Now, it's a news story in Chicago. It is a news story nationally, but a leading news story for 50 people? It's done. The video's out. I don't think, personally, I think at this point, too much is being made of it, which only encourages the protesters to do more.
I think that social media has, as you mentioned before, I think social media has a lot to do with it. But again, that is a way for the protesters to get their message out. And I think, were this at a time when there was no social media as we see it now, I think you might see more people at the protests.
Really?
Just a thought. Because what was the only other way to get a message out back, say, 30 years ago, even? It was through local television. That was it. Local television and radio. You didn't have Periscope. You didn't have Facebook. You didn't have Twitter. You didn't have all these places where you could post videos. You could post pictures. You could document what people say and what people do and instantly have the world know what's going on.
I'm thinking, based on what you just said, that local television to compete with social media is showing maybe more of the video than they might have shown, say, 15 or 20 years ago before all of the social came about.
Well, some of the local media, as you may have heard, some of the local media refused to show the entire video.
Right. Yeah. But I wonder if they're showing more of the video. They're not showing the whole thing, but they're showing some. And we're seeing this young man, we're seeing him shot. We're seeing him actually die. And I remember a time when standards and practices would say, no, you're not going to show anyone dying on television. Well, if you've seen the video on TV and it's been shown over and over and over and over and over, which I think has gone beyond the point at this point. I mean, if you haven't seen it now, you live in a cave. And enough of showing this video.
Well, here's the other thing. 30 years ago, and I don't have my dates listed here, but 30 years ago, I don't think there were dash cam video cameras in patrol cars. So you would never have seen a video or a film.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Mr. Badish, I will call on you in just a couple of minutes to offer your turkeys of the year.
Shake your left hand, gobble. Shake your right hand, gobble. Shake your tail now, gobble, gobble, gobble. Shake your left foot, gobble. Shake your right foot, gobble. Shake your tail now, gobble, gobble, gobble.
I really don't believe that Nick DiGilio will ever allow me to be here again. I can't even turn this down. Turn that. Thank you very much. It didn't work on my end. The turkey wanted to keep gobbling. The turkeys of the year, an idea which I borrow from Roy Leonard. We're going to hear Roger Badish's choices, our producer Yun, his choices, as well as your choices. You can call 312-981-7200. And you already did offer your opinion on Facebook over and over and over. And there seems to be actually a consensus as to who may be the turkey of the year. It's kind of someone you either love or you hate. Here are two people I love, Steve and Johnny. They will be here after 5 o'clock. I am just excited to see them personally. Who doesn't love Steve King and Johnny Putman?
Shake your left hand, gobble. Shake your right hand, gobble. Shake your tail now, gobble, gobble, gobble. Shake your left foot, gobble. Shake your right foot, gobble. Shake your tail now, gobble, gobble, gobble. Gobble, gobble, the turkey goes. Gobble, gobble, the turkey goes. Gobble, gobble.
All right. So the turkeys of the year, who are they? Who are your turkeys of the year? Roger Badish, I begin with you.
Okay. Movies. I've seen some bad ones. But I was very disappointed, even though I knew the reviews were already bad. But I gave in to my desire because I am a Marvel and DC geek.
Okay.
And I always like to see how true to the comics the movies are. So I saw the second version of Fantastic Four.
And clearly you think it was a turkey.
Oh, somebody ran out of money about 10 minutes into the movie.
All right.
Really bad. My political turkey is the presidential campaign.
Yes.
It's.
You're not alone. So people on Facebook, on my Facebook pages, when I asked in advance for the ideas, said the same thing. Folks can text 312-981-7200 as well, and they're saying the same thing. So that seems to be the consensus, and there's one candidate in particular.
Not getting into individual
candidates. No, not from you.
Yeah, right.
But from Facebook, Linda, and I can go through a list of people here.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah, and I'm just looking through the pages here, and a whole lot of people. There's one candidate in particular, Donald Trump. And I don't think it's only about his hair. So it's someone that you either love or you hate, apparently.
Yeah.
And they're on they call him a turkey. So who else do you think?
Presidential wise?
No, just in general.
Any
other turkeys?
Here's my approach to most turkeys.
Yes.
I ignore them.
All right.
Because then I don't get upset about it.
Well, that's
you know what
fair
I'm saying?
Enough. That's fair enough.
And so if there are turkeys out there, whether they be companies, people, events, whatever. You know what? I don't have to deal with it. I'm not hiding my head in the sand. I don't deal with it.
Okay.
I just go on with my life, but I don't let what they do affect me.
Young producer? Yeah. Who are your turkeys of the year?
Gosh, I think I'd start with ISIS for one.
Well, yeah, more than a turkey.
Yeah, that's more than a turkey. But we were just talking about films that were turkeys,
mm-hmm.
and I recently saw one called Sicario. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. It's sort of about the drug war in Mexico, and Emily Blunt stars as this FBI special agent in the film, and it is just completely ridiculous. What I don't like about these films is that they sort of take things that sometimes I wonder if the writers in Hollywood are people that just don't get out much. The dialogue is incredibly unrealistic. The scenario's completely unrealistic.
All based on stereotypes of Mexico?
Very much so.
Really? That's sad.
Very much so. So, I mean, you know, I can't stand that anymore. And you know what? Hollywood is a turkey this year, in my opinion. Every year they just make these money-grabbing movies, and I am just not a fan. Maybe I'll watch more independent films.
Fair enough. Any other turkeys from you?
Gosh, not that much. Not that much that has disappointed me. I'm going to have to agree with the Donald Trump one. I think everybody's sort of on that wagon as well. I'm definitely not a big fan of that guy, and he keeps digging himself a deeper hole. I'm just wondering what kind of people support him. And what kind of people enjoy that kind of stuff? Do you know what I mean?
All right. Well, 312-981-7200. We may hear what you mean or people who disagree with what you mean. Also, what all of you said as to who your turkeys of the year are next. No, it's just the two of them. After 5 o'clock, it is just the two of them. Steve King, Johnny Putman, return to WGN Radio. I'll tell you, I've had many, many honors in my career. I am about to tell you about two of them. One was their last show here, their last regular show. I appeared on for a couple of minutes. I'll remember that couple of minutes for the rest of my life. A very different kind of honor. Earlier in this program, we talked about a Mexican Thanksgiving. I periscoped it, and if you go to Steve Dale Pets, you'll be able to see and take down notes if you want a recipe for a Mexican turkey. But really, it's just a turkey, you know, and it made me, I'm hungry now. So you can see that on Periscope, and I think on Twitter, too. Steve Dale Pets is my Twitter handle. You can also find me on Facebook, of course, facebook.com/ Steve Dale Pet World. Steve Dale's Other World is the podcast I do for WGN Plus. So simply go to WGNplus.com, and in fact, you can watch me. Or hear me anyway. You can't really watch me. It's radio. But you can hear me talk about all these. See, here's what happened. The program director called me into a meeting. The assistant program director here, Stephanie Menendez, one of the nicest folks. And I'm not just saying that because she is the assistant program director. She truly is. And she said, Steve, your ratings are so great. And they are for my pet show that I do Sunday morning, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm number one, actually, of all.
You're the number one pet show host?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm the number one at that time. Number one.
That's fantastic.
Well, I said that, and now I probably just jinxed it all.
Oh, sorry.
But I know. But I thought, okay, so if I'm in there, I thought, you know, it might be fun to do a podcast. And she said, why don't you do something that isn't necessarily about pets? Because I began doing radio, playing music on the radio, doing general talk on the radio.
Were you a rock jock?
At one time, I was. Name of the format, I probably played it at some
country?
Radio. That's not one, no.
Okay.
Name another.
Classical?
That's not one either.
Okay.
I did classical once. I filled in. This was going back to college radio. Mm-hmm. They never asked me back again because I botched every name of every composer,
oh,
I'm sure.
Oh, you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't a classical music people talk like this. And I said, hey, everybody! So it didn't really work well.
Just a little excited.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, I'll talk about Steve Dale's Pet World in a second, or Steve Dale's Other World, which is the podcast that I do that's not about pets. But when you said just a little, yeah, I know. Well, you want me to explain that?
Yeah, no, that's okay. I got it.
It's a podcast. Yeah, it's a podcast that I do for WGN Plus.
Right.
And it's not about pets. It's about whatever it is. So one of them, I spoke with some of the producers that produced my show at one time.
Right.
And they have really nice jobs here now. They survived me.
Oh,
and they're thriving. So it's not easy to survive me.
I've heard stories, but we won't go into it.
And they're doing great now. So that's one podcast. Yeah. Another was with Wanda Clark, secretary of Lucille Ball.
Ooh.
I knew Lucy, and I'm still in touch with Wanda Clark, so we talked about, because there's a movie that's going to be made about Lucy and Desi's story.
They had one on TV a number of years ago.
Yeah, they did,
okay.
But this is a feature film that's going to be made. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the actress's name. Cate Blanchett
is going to play Lucy.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, supposedly. I mean, and they haven't talked about who would play the other roles.
I'd be interested to see that.
Yeah. So we talked about all that and what Lucy was really like. I mean, the idea of these podcasts is to sort of take you behind the scenes, sort of open up the curtains.
Yeah,
in back of the curtain.
Yeah.
Another one that I did was with the guys that were here for the Mexican restaurant. And this is the one that's just posted. We talked about what it's like to run a restaurant and misconceptions about Mexican food. It turns out that as good as the burrito is, they know nothing about burritos in Mexico except what they learned from America. And I believe the same is true for pizza, and the same is true for chow mein.
Chinese food.
Yeah.
I have heard stories that much of what's on a Chinese restaurant's menu
never be served
has
in China.
Nothing to do with China.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we talked about the same thing being true for Mexican food and when it is true. And we also talked about one of your now new favorite topics, and that would be tequila. So that's all.
My new favorite
Yes,
topic.
It is. I think it is. And there's more right here if you'd like some.
No. I've got my water here. That's a good enough for me. That's about as strong as I can get.
You can hear the podcast, all of them, at WGN Plus. I brought you in here because I wanted to talk to you about espresso.
Yeah.
So at this time of the morning, and especially midday, I guess, is traditionally when people have espresso.
Oh, right. Well, in Europe. Italy,
yeah,
in Europe,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure, they take a little afternoon break.
Uh-huh. But now is a good time, too, if you're just getting up.
And a lot of people, when they order their lattes and olés and triple-decker mocha loco
whatever,
it's made with espresso coffee. And espresso refers to the roast. It's a very dark roast. There's a darker roast, which is a French roast, which in many countries overseas, it is actually made as a thicker brew and taken with maybe some lemon or a lot of sugar because it is so tart. I love espresso.
You're knowledgeable about it, and in fact, you were telling you were telling me some things I had no idea about. So I assumed that it is really high in caffeine, and that turns out not to be the case.
Exactly, there is as much caffeine in a cup of espresso as there is in a cup of decaf coffee, because caffeine is one of And again, I've forgotten the total amount, but I remember it being at least 30 different chemicals in the coffee bean. And coffee is a fruit, by the way. The coffee bean is a fruit.
Huh.
It's grown on coffee trees.
I guess if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And you see the pulp around the coffee bean, and it goes through a huge process. But the caffeine content, caffeine is one of the chemicals within the coffee bean. The longer you roast a coffee bean, the more the caffeine gets pulled to the surface and burned off. It doesn't exist anymore. So if you're getting a mocha, latte, chauca, whatever, you've got 2-3 shots of espresso in there, you're basically getting no caffeine. What you are getting are some of the other chemicals from the bean that give it its really sharp, tart taste as a dark roast, those chemicals are not activated on the lower roast for a regular cup of coffee. What is activated for a regular cup of coffee is the caffeine. That's activated, and that's why a lot of people take regular coffee. The darker the coffee roast, the less the caffeine.
It's interesting because in chocolate, I think it's the reverse. I think the darker the chocolate, not that chocolate has a lot of caffeine in it anyway, but the darker the chocolate, I believe the more caffeine it has.
I'm not sure about that. All I know is that I've heard that darker chocolate is healthier for your heart.
I've heard that too.
Take it in moderation.
And in fact, darker chocolate is more dangerous to dogs.
Oh, really?
I know. Yeah.
I knew chocolate was dangerous to dogs.
More theobromine in it than lighter chocolate. Huh, and theobromine is the chemical that is a problem. Yeah. Thank you, Roger.
Well, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
This has been Coffee 101 on WGN. More of your phone calls. We do have some, actually, some phone calls about this very topic, about the turkeys of the year. And I haven't gotten to all of those turkeys that you wrote me in on Facebook and said, these guys are turkeys or these women are turkeys. So turkeys next on WGN. Jill, you're on WGN. I understand you have a turkey or two of the year for us. Jill?
Jill? Can you not hear me?
I do now. Hi.
Hi. I don't know this phone. Yes, I would say the protesters. I think they're being very selfish and very detrimental to your city.
What city are you in?
I'm in Milwaukee.
So it's interesting that someone from Milwaukee has that perspective. I appreciate that, and as you might have heard earlier when I was talking to Roger, I don't totally disagree with you. Why do you think that?
I think a lot of people, a lot of African-American people were brought up to fear the police, to hate the police, whereas I worked with a girl where she said, well, sometimes they're good. She said, when I got raped, they helped me, but mostly there's this distrust, whereas I was taught I go to policemen for help. He will help me. You know, something's wrong, and there's all this hate, and, you know, I just think of the cop. If someone's coming at me with a knife, I'm going to defend myself. But, you know, that's one case. It's sort of like saying this is, you know, the ugly side of doing it. It's like I enjoy my steak, but I don't want to see the slaughterhouse of how it's done.
No, that's a good. That's actually a good analogy. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your comments, Jill. Interesting that it comes also from Milwaukee, but I don't think it's only a race issue. I think that it's also a violence issue and a attitude of the police issue. And the Black Caucus called for the dismissal of McCarthy, who is an African-American. So I think it goes beyond being a race issue. Some of the other folks you said, aside from Donald Trump, are turkeys. Maggie Daly Park, because they don't allow dogs. I disagree. I agree with that, very much agree with that. People who eat turkey are turkeys, according to someone on Facebook. Some very funny responses here. Let's see. People who don't take their pets in for regular checkups. A lot of pet-related things because of what I do. Street vendors and beachwear stores illegally selling baby turtles. I don't see a lot of that in Chicago, but it may indeed be happening. Torturing of cats with cucumbers online. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google that. Cats and cucumbers, and you will see some of the most stupid videos. Those who won't cross over dog train, we're talking about people that use electronic and shock collars. I agree with that. The veterinarian in Texas who shot someone's cat with a bow and arrow, I totally agree with that. Jay Cutler. Several people said he is the biggest turkey. People who text while driving. People who text while walking their dogs. People who get pets just because they seem cute at the time. I agree with all of that. It is 4:51 on WGN, and we go around the Midwest, and something I've been on this radio station for 18 years. I have never had the opportunity to do. I'm thrilled about having this very simple opportunity to introduce Mr. Orion Samuelson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Pet Guy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. What's happening with weather around the Midwest, around the world, around the universe?
Well, first of all, since I'm working out of the Scottsdale, Arizona studio, I'll give you the Arizona weather. I just stepped outside the house this morning, and here it is 3:51 in the morning. And looked up at the desert sky, and there is a bright full moon shining almost directly down overhead. So to me, one of the very nice things in the world is the bright, shiny moon in a desert sky. It's absolutely beautiful. And the temperature right now at 55 degrees, so we are not much warmer here this morning than we are around the Midwest. And the big thing about weather for the Midwest agricultural producers this year, the combines are parked. They're already put away, done for the season. And over the years, the goal of farmers in the Midwest is to be done with harvest. And there are many years when they have not been able to finish harvest before Thanksgiving and have had their Thanksgiving Day dinner in the cab of a combine. That will not be the case this year, because the harvest weather was absolutely perfect. I talked to one farmer in the Midwest who had 31 straight days of harvest weather and was able to harvest consecutively for 31 days. So the forecast now, let's head out to the Quad Cities, see what's in store there for this Thanksgiving Day holiday. Scattered showers, there's a 40% chance of showers today, with a high near 59, and it could be some gusty winds out of the south. Tonight, rain, patchy fog before midnight with a low around 37. And then tomorrow in the Quad Cities, a 30% chance of rain before noon. And then again, a windy day, and this time swinging around to come out of the north at about 15 miles an hour, gusting as high as 25. Saturday should be a mostly sunny day with a high near 38. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 41. That's pretty good flying weather for people coming back from the Thanksgiving weekend. Monday, a chance of rain and snow before noon, then turning to rain in the Quad Cities. So let's head up to Madison, Wisconsin this morning. A lot of folks have gone to visit relatives in America's Dairyland. 47, cloudy at Madison this morning. A 40% chance, make it a 100% chance of rain during the day today. And a high of 52 degrees in Madison. And then tonight, rain, areas of fog, and then turning to a wintry mix as the temperature drops to 31. Tomorrow, a slight chance of a mixture of snow and sleet, and then becoming mostly cloudy for the day. Tomorrow's high in Madison, only 34. And then on Saturday, a sunny day, but the high only 35 degrees. Saturday night, down to 21 and clear skies. And Sunday, mostly sunny, high of 38 in the Madison area. Continuing our journey around the Midwest this morning, it's almost as warm in Champaign, Illinois, as it is in Scottsdale, Arizona. We're 55 degrees, Champaign 53 degrees, and partly cloudy. 30% chance of rain today with a high near 60. It'll be breezy, winds gusting up to 32 miles an hour out of the south. Then rain mainly after 9 o'clock tonight with a low around 51, still breezy. Tomorrow, rain in the Champaign area, the temperature falling to around 41 by 5 in the afternoon, and the wind swinging still out of the south. On Saturday, a 30% chance of rain, mostly cloudy throughout the day, high near 43. And then Sunday in the Champaign area, chance of rain, mostly cloudy, high near 44. And then over to the east, South Bend, Indiana, 50 degrees and light rain this morning. and rain likely, mainly before 7, according to the forecast. But there'll be sprinkles throughout the day with a high near 59 in northern Indiana, southern Michigan. Rain tonight, rain tomorrow with a high near 52 and winds out of the southwest switching to out of the north by tomorrow afternoon. On Saturday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high near 40. And on Saturday night, low around 29. Sunday, northern Indiana, southern Michigan, partly sunny with a high near 42. And right now it's Chicago, light rain, 49 degrees, and it's going to be a damp Thanksgiving day. May want to take the umbrella with you wherever you're going throughout the day. So that's our swing around the Midwest to take a look at Thanksgiving Day weather. And taking a look at markets, well, today all of the markets in the U.S. are closed. But keep in mind, Thanksgiving Day is a U.S. holiday. So other markets around the world will be open. Generally, when American markets are closed, trading volume drops considerably in world markets. But we will be reporting a little bit on the worldwide market activity up until 7 o'clock this morning. And overnight grain trade, no grain trade overnight at the Chicago Board of Trade, and markets are closed today. And Steve, a pleasure to work with you this morning.
Oh, it is my pleasure, sir. I'm disappointed, no grain trade. I don't know what that means, but I'm very disappointed by it.
Well, that means they will not be setting world grain prices at the Chicago Board of Trade this morning, where they do every other trading day of the week.
Oh, heartbreaking. I've got good news for you, though. After 5 o'clock, Steve and Johnny are here.
Oh, my golly, Steve and Johnny are back.
Yeah, they are.
The authors, besides being radio hosts.
You are right about that, Mr. Samuelson. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you later in the month with Mr. Cochran.
All right, very good.
Thank you. Well, what a pleasure it's been to fill in for Nick DiGilio. And I think I've completely fumbled his show. He'll never ask me back again. It was fun to do. I thank my producer, Jan, for being here and supporting me, as I do need all the support I can get. Coming up Sunday morning at 6:30, I am on the radio, and we talk with Jackson Galaxy. You know, you've seen him on Animal Planet, the show, My Cat from Hell! He talks about what to do to enrich the environment of your indoor cat. I mean, it's great that we're keeping our cats indoors. That's a good thing. Cats are living longer as a result than ever before. But let's make it interesting for these cats indoors. And he has some home improvement projects that we can do for our cats. Home improvement for cats. Sunday morning at 6:30, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.